This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we are on the air with Mike Winters. And Mike, undisclosed source of news here. I understand your brother, Steve, unlike you.
Unlike me. Yeah, he's unlike me.
Yeah, he can operate a cell phone and the internet.
Yeah, he does all that stuff, unlike me. I have no desire to do that.
Okay.
I don't care about internet or anything else. I like fishing net, but not internet.
Not in internet. All right. I just had to pass that along.
Well, you know, you're not the only one that has mocked me for my inability to use the internet. Everybody does.
And do they?
Oh, yeah. They all laugh at me and call me stupid and the caveman and all kinds of stuff. And I laugh and I say, yep, you're right.
You're not stupid, that's for sure. What you do know is gardening and landscaping.
I do. That's good to know.
What's the topic today?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just going to start rattling off stuff. But anyway, if you're listening, thank you. And this is a gardening question and answer call-in show. If you have a problem with your yard or your lawn, your sprinkler system, or your trees are all dying, call in and tell me what the problem is, and we'll try to diagnose it here on the air, and I'll ask you some real simple questions, and if you give me the truth, I can fix it right here on the radio, or help fix it at least. But the number, if you want to call, 673-4464, and we'll get you right in here. So anyway, even though, and I wanted to make this upfront, the promo that they talk about at the beginning of the show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, I no longer own that business. I sold it, but I am still a landscape contractor on my own. And I am doing now landscape consulting only because I don't want to shovel anything anymore.
There you go. You're tired of shoveling that.
The dirt, that bark mulch and stuff.
We have a phone call.
Good. That's what I like to do. Start off with a phone call.
All right. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
So what's the best way to get rid of, like, moles?
Black
Is there
mold?
Any, like, natural? No, moles.
Oh, mold.
You know, they leave mounds in your garden.
Yeah. You get a fox terrier and chain him out there by the molehill, and when the mole jumps up, the fox terrier will bite his head off. No, that would probably work, but I don't know. To tell you the truth, there are mole traps, and there is mole poisoning that you can put down in the berm itself. I would suggest that you go to the co-op, Farmers Co-op, and see what they have in stock. And they're hard things to get rid of. And I've never found a surefire way in 50 years of doing this of how to get rid of them and keep them out of your yard. So you must have a nice yard. You must have good watering system and everything else, because that would attract a lot of worms, and the moles like worms, and they come up to get them and ruin your yard and your lawn or your shrubs or whatever in the meantime. So that's my best advice. Go to the co-op, or even to the what do I want to call it down the street here at the courthouse, Master Gardeners. They may have a solution down there too. And you've got the extension agent, who probably deals with a lot of these problems, and they may have a surefire way of getting rid of them. But that's my best answer.
All right, thank you, sir.
Did it help?
Yeah. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
All right. Alrighty.
And moles are hard. I know some people shoot them. You know, they wait until they pop up and boom.
Yeah, he'd sit out there for hours in the lawn chair with a shotgun.
Oh, a shotgun?
Yeah. Well, and just waiting for that dirt to move.
Well, if you live in Ucrest, you shouldn't do that.
Oh.
You know, maybe a pellet gun or a BB gun or something like that, just to, shoot for their eyes and blind them, and then they go to the neighbors. I don't know.
Oh, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hello.
Yeah, I had a question. We have a pretty established Deodar cedar that in a, it's planted kind of in a little landscaped area, has a couple of sweet gum trees right next to it and some rhododendrons and stuff underneath it. And every year in the spring, you know, we'll get this beautiful new growth that comes on, and the tree looks amazing and super healthy. And then already now that new growth has kind of dwindled and is, has turned like brown on the end. Like it's, parts of it have just kind of died off sporadically throughout the tree.
Uh-huh.
And we can't imagine that it's already, you know, dried up with water. But we're trying to figure out what's going on with that. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I do. How often do you water that tree, for instance, or do
we haven't watered it because it's probably 15 years old and I don't know, 20 feet tall. And so we kind of thought that it was maybe beyond that and not needing it. So we really haven't been watering at all.
Well, how about the, are there, you said rhododendrons and other plantings, are they around a tree?
Yes.
And do you water them regularly?
It hasn't been real regular, no.
Uh-huh. Well, how's the trunk look? Have you looked at the trunk and inspected to see if there's any holes in the trunk from some bugs exploring how to get into it? Or sometimes there's borers that like to bore into the trunk and suck the sap right out of the tree, and that has a detrimental effect on the tree. Have you noticed anything like that?
Well, I haven't, but honestly, I haven't even thought to look at that. I can absolutely do that, but it hasn't been something that I've thought of at this point.
Yeah. Well, the only Deodore cedars are just a tough tree. I've got them planted all over my place. I never water them. I watered them the first year I planted them, and after that they were on their own, and they're magnificent. They're gorgeous. They grow. They do well. And I haven't had the problem that you have described, because since I don't water anything in my personal landscape, I don't have a bug problem because the ground is dry. And so,
right.
You know, so consequently, I don't attract very many predators that crawl through the ground and like to eat trees. So look at the trunk and get in there and inspect it all the way around. And you should see these holes somewhere anywhere from a foot to 2 feet up from the ground level. And if you see those kinds of things, you may have a borer problem.
Okay. So, and then if I were to notice something like that, is there some kind of a next step then?
Yeah, the next step would be to the co-op and look for some borer spray or killer. And you'd spray the trunk and soak the ground around it, and that would kill the borers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, I like the sounds of that. I appreciate the help.
Well, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, you know, those critters, they're like little, they're little stinking worms, you know, maybe an inch along there, and they're kind of grayish and segmented. And they do more damage to the landscapes in Douglas County, Western Oregon, or whatever, than just about anything.
I don't know if I've ever seen them. Probably. But
maybe you don't have a good landscape.
Probably not.
They only like good landscapes.
And China vines.
vines. That vine's still alive.
Oh, yeah. It's still bushing out and spreading.
Good. Let it go for a year and see what happens.
I will. As long as it stays away from the Easter lily.
Well, the Easter, yeah, definitely. Oh gosh, but those borers, they'll attack you know, your rhodies, your peach tree. Usually they like fruit trees because there's the sap or the whatever is under the bark there that's making the fruit tree grow so well is good tasting to them, maybe, and that's a good source of food for them.
A little dessert.
Yeah, dessert possibly. Yeah, but for today, you know, one thing I read in a competing newspaper The Oregonian.
Yeah.
On the front page, there was a climate scientist that said, watch out, we're going to get a big, big rainstorm here fairly soon.
It's
whatever he's doing, building up in the Pacific and headed to the Pacific Northwest. And he said it's just like how California was hit with their massive rainstorms.
Oh, no.
And I thought, well, this is June, and July is just around the corner, so maybe that wouldn't hurt us too much. And the creeks and the rivers are fairly well down, so they could stand a torrential rain. He did not predict how many total inches it would be, but he said at least an inch a day. And I thought,
that
an inch a day is nothing.
Really?
It seems
like a lot to me.
No, it isn't. It really, truly isn't. It soaks in pretty quick. Now, if you have 20 days of it an inch a day, then you got some problems, but anyway, I thought that was interesting, and I can't remember, I should have written his name down and where he was from and all that, but that was like the front page news on the Oregonian this morning. I thought, whoa.
Was his name Jack B. Moron?
No, Jack B. Quick. Yeah, anyway, that's a news flash from me. Anyway. And anybody has any other questions, 673-4464. Don't hesitate to call no matter what I'm talking about. So one of my favorite types of trees are the Japanese maples. I think they're a magnificent tree. They are a tough tree. They're a beautiful tree. And the only way you can kill a Japanese maple is watering it every day, but other than that, they're good. But they come in many sizes, shapes, and colors. Some of the leaves are green with white stripes through them, or pink edges on them, and some are deep red, some are light red, some are deep green. I mean, the variety of color in a Japanese maple and the way it grows is a tree set by itself. When people see a Japanese maple, they go, wow, what a pretty tree. What kind is that? They may not know. But Japanese maples, and I forgot, I was doing some research a few years ago on them, and I'm always doing research on trees, but there were several thousand varieties of Japanese maple in existence today, according to the article I was reading.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that's several thousand different kinds of Japanese maple. And I'm thinking, how in the world can they tell the difference between this one and this one and this one and have several thousand? But, that's...
Man, those Japanese were busy.
Well, but they grow in China. They grow in Korea. They grow in Korea, Japan. I mean, they're like the Doug fir that we have here. I mean, they're just like wild. There's great forests of them in those countries. We here in the modern world, if you will, look at Japanese, a lot of people look at Japanese maples as these small, rounded, red leaf kinds of things. Well, not when you got a thousand plus varieties, because some of them get 40 feet. over a long time, time span,
probably in a Jesus's lifetime.
Yeah, they just have a certain beauty that makes them very unique in their branching patterns or leaf patterns, and many people, they look at them and they say, oh gosh, these must be difficult to grow, when the opposite is actually true. I mean, they're an easy easy tree to grow.
Wow.
In my home. Excuse me.
You want a break?
No.
Okay.
In my home landscaping, I have several varieties growing in locations that are tough spots, in full sun and native soil, on my hillsides, along my creek. Mm. And my purpose in planting these all these years, because, I owned a nursery and I'm a landscape contractor and all that kind of stuff, and people are always asking me questions about different plants and stuff, but I get a lot of questions on Japanese maples. But my purpose in planting them in these harsh locations and some good locations was to test their hardiness, to see, are they really as hardy as the book says or the literature says? And in doing so, I could actually tell my clients how tough they are and what were their requirements to not only survive but thrive and look good and be nice all year round. And so I have some on some of my hillsides. I have some that are just And I think I haven't watered them this year at all, and they look magnificent. They're great. And
nice.
The one on my hillside, I need to prune it because it's growing so stinking fast. It's kind of one of the main branches is leaning out, and I say, oh, gosh, I should have pruned that last year. Well, this year I got to mark it on my calendar, and when the leaves fall off, it goes dormant. I got to prune one side of it so
it doesn't topple
over. Yeah, the weight of the branches are growing in that direction. You go, wait a minute, you can't do that. But I want to make sure. Over the years, when I go to do a landscape plan or a consultation or something like that, and people want to know about Japanese maples, would they work here in my yard? How would they look? How many, you know, what can I get? What would be the ideal type? And so I can tell them, you know, these are the types we have. And currently, I think we normally carried probably a dozen varieties, you know. And so
that's,
you know,
a good selection.
Yeah, dwarf, medium, and taller ones, some with red leaves, some with green leaves, some with multicolored leaves that are green with white strips and through the leaf. I mean, they're really, really unique in that respect. Mm-hmm. And I could tell them, you know, well, this would work good. This would look good. This would be a good, you know, tree for your front entry. But you don't want to put it near a lawn where you have a sprinkler system because you're going to overwater it.
And bye-bye.
No. And they don't like water. I mean, they like it to a certain extent.
Yeah, but
when the... When our soils are predominantly clay, when they're wet, they're wet. They don't drain, and they stay wet for a long time. And even though the sun is shining and 75 or 80 degrees, people think, oh, my gosh, I got to water these trees. I got to water these shrubs. Well, for the most part, that's doing more damage than being
good.
Than helpful to the trees or the shrubs. We got a break or something?
We do.
Okay, we'll be back.
They must have loved last year, that extreme drought.
Oh, yeah, they did. They did well, yes. It's amazing.
We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, it was 74 in the parking lot on my truck thing, yeah.
Well, never mind.
No.
I can't see what you told me you were doing out there.
I was reading. Told you that. But I'm talking about Japanese maples right now. And I have about, I think 15 different varieties, types growing. And I've put them up in the timber where they get very little sun, maybe 2-3 hours a day. And the rest of it is in the shade. And then I've got them on the full sun slopes that get the sun from morning till the sun goes down over the ridge. And then I've got them along my creek where it's, you know, fairly nice and cool because of the other trees around that. And I've got them in pots. And the ones that use the most water are the ones in pots, of course, because it's and some of them are my bonsai types and some are just, you know, in big pots. But the pots have a tendency to dry out a lot faster than the ground. So you have to have a, you know, at least about a once a week maybe or once every 10 days you soak them. But that's about it. But my whole point here is that they're not some fragile exotic tree. They're exotic, but they're not fragile by any stretch of the imagination. And people that aren't familiar with them, they make that mistake thinking, oh, you know, you got to treat this thing with kid gloves and you got to water it every day and feed it once a week. And no, don't do it. Stop. But like I say, they're a beautiful tree. And all these that I have around mine, I've not lost one in 30 years. They're all growing well.
That's a good track record.
Yeah, and the trees, you know, that are closer to the house get the most care because we've got some rhododendrons mixed in with them. And so the rhodies get water, say, yeah, once a week maybe. And so the trees get a little moisture there. But that's in the planting around, you know, fairly close to the house that where you don't want to stretch 14 hoses together to or a 5-gallon bucket of water, walk up the hill. I don't think so. But the hillside maples, they get nothing but what nature provides, and that's good. And, you know, they're found growing naturally, like in Korea, China, Japan, and there's probably other places. And, you know, they're most of them are considered as a decorative part of the landscape, and they are. And they're usually never planted like as a shade tree because they don't, very few of them grow to the size or the thickness of the canopy, the leaves and stuff, they'd make partial shade, but you couldn't count on them as like a regular maple that, yeah, you're in full shade and it's cool and it's nice and it's good to sit under.
Besides that, the original owner would probably be dead by that time.
It could be by the time they got to be a shade tree. Unless they planted them when they were 8 years old or something.
Yeah.
So most Japanese maples are considered as decorative in the landscape, like a highlight of part of your landscape, your entryway or mound in the front yard or backyard. And that's really what they're good for. And a tall maple can be, 10 to 12 feet in height. And then, like I said, there are some very old ones, and they didn't name them, but they can get to be 25 to 30 feet, but it takes about 50 years to get there. I met J.D. Vertrees 50 years ago, and he specialized in growing Japanese maples. He grafted them. He taught me how to graft them, and he had thousands of them. And he lived out here on, out there by along the river, what road that is that? Oh gosh, yeah, one of those
roads.
Well, now, yeah, but I'll pass the country club. You take a left and whatever that road is, and he lived right on the river, and it could be. I get my roads mixed up, you know, but he just did a magnificent job with them. And and he had some that were, good 30, 35 feet tall. But he had lived there for a long time, and he planted, you know, some. There are some that grow a little bit faster than others, and there's some that grow like 2 inches a year. And then there's some that maybe grow a foot a year on average.
Yeah.
And it depends on the ground they're in and the care they get and all that kind of stuff. But they're planted for their beauty, you know, and like the small red lace leaf maples that everybody likes and they put in their front yard, and they're really, really pretty. And there's green leafed ones, and then many of them have variegated leaf designs, like three different colors in the leaf. You know, dark green, light green, and white, and some have kind of a pink edging to the leaf. You know, so you go, whoa, what is that kind of tree that does that, man? This is good. But I think it's like one of the more popular trees here in America. And most nurseries that you go to, they're apt to carry, of some variety or several varieties of Japanese maple. Even the box stores have them. So, you know, because they're good sellers, you know. And it, like I say, they're easy to grow. I've grown them for years. And like I said, J.D. Vertrees taught me and a friend of mine, Stuart Wilson, how to graft. And we grafted our first year 3,000 of them.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, you use a very sharp razor-type knife. And I can't tell you how many cuts I had from slipping and go, ow, you know, shallow cuts, but many, many, many shallow cuts is a real pain.
Oh, that probably hurt worse than the
especially when you wash your hands with soap and water.
Oh,
and
wow.
And you go, oh, no, I hate this. Oh, gosh. But over the years, by selection and cross-pollination, you know, and actually this has been going on for more than 300 years. The Japanese people have been developing the ranges in size from the miniature to the full size. And And of course, they make great bonsai, too. I've got some that are bonsai at my place. And they make a great small tree for a deck or a patio. You can put them in a very large pot. And they're good for 15, 20 years in a very large pot, provided... Yeah, provided you don't overwater or you know, try to give them more fertilizer than they actually need because they're so confined, and they do well. It's good. And they can frame your front entry if you have a home with, say, a set of steps, three or four steps to go up to the front door, and it's kind of a wide thing, and you've got room on either side of the of your stairway. They make a beautiful entryway into your home, and there's so many ways to use them. That's why they're so versatile.
Yeah.
And although, like I said earlier, although they look like a fragile tree, they ain't. The opposite is actually true. And, you know, and they're tough, and they'll survive neglect rather than pampering. You start pampering them, i.e. water, fertilizer, and then they start to go downhill quick. And they like to be pruned. You know, some of the shorter, more bushy, smaller ones, what happens, they grow so many limbs, and they're so tight in there that people need to thin some of the limbs out so there can be air circulation. That's when you start to see dead and drying leaves and little branches that are dead. And it's you just got to get in there with some good pruners and thin them out, and you'd be amazed at how, you know, when you're done thinning all these dead branches out, you go, oh my gosh, I destroyed a tree. Not really. You're doing it in the winter. There's no leaves on them. But the following spring, when they do leaf out, wow, you created a beautiful tree. I mean, because now it's healthier. It doesn't have to work as hard to produce good foliage, and so consequently, it's a better looking tree. And then you can see the trunk and the design of the trunk. They're not a straight trunk. They're kind of gnarly and curvy, and so are the branches and stuff. And that's the total picture of the tree. That's what makes it that exotic tree, if you will. And it's all because you pruned it. All because you. I had one job up in Sutherland. Some folks that I know, they had, oh gosh, 5 or 7 Japanese maples in their backyard, and they had round rock instead of bark mulch, except right around the tree they had about a 3-foot diameter circle of bark mulch. So they said, we'd like you to prune these because they're so thick and they're full and there's, you know, branches are dying and stuff like that. So I took a look at it and I said, okay. The only problem was laying, they were the low variety. You know, I had to lay on the ground, look up into the tree from the ground up to see, you know, what was dying because they'd never pruned them. I mean, they were full. But I'm laying on these rocks for about 3 hours. And I'd get up from one tree and stretch, and then I'd have to go down and lay under another tree for 20 minutes, a half an hour to prune the boogers. Boogers. But when we got done, I mean, they loved it. They looked good. They looked healthy. And you have to do that. But I don't recommend you putting a whole bunch of rock in your yard because it's really hard to lay down on that rock and prune those stuff. Yeah.
That's really rocking and rolling.
Yeah, rocking and rolling. We got a break?
We do.
Okay, we'll be back. 673-4464 if you have a call. Shoot it.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we're back. And the phone number once again there, Mike?
673-4464. If you want to call us, ask a question, you can be on anything in your yard.
Please do.
And I like to talk to people, and I like to help you with your problems.
He's bored with me.
Yeah, I mean, he drives me nuts. You know? You ought to hear him on the brakes. Oh, gosh. But I've been speaking about Japanese maples this first two segments here. And like I say, in the landscape, they're planted for their beauty, and they're multicolored. They're, the sizes go from like the true dwarf that only gets, say, 2 feet tall in 30 years to something that'll get 40 feet tall in 50 years, you know, and it just depends on the variety you want, the color, you know, it's a great tree. In 20, 25 years or whatever, you're going to see some, mine at home have been in, oh, some of the larger ones, about 20 years, and they're 15 to 16 feet tall at this time with about 10, 12 foot spread. And they provide a little shade because I'll sit under them in the hot afternoon sun and read the News Review and, you know, enjoy my evening at home. And I'm getting a little shade.
Nothing like a little shady News Review.
Yeah, shady News Review.
I didn't mean that. It was a joke.
No, he said, I'm serious. But over the years, by, careful selection and cross-pollination, like I said, probably the Japanese been doing this for according to the literature, about 300 years, and they developed all these different types by, you know, hybridizing and grafting and all that kind of thing. That was like, you know, one of their deals. Boy, they love to do that kind of thing. They're very, very good gardeners, and they really, they have a different slant on gardens than we in America do. We in America, for the most part, this is not everybody, but you know, we have bigger yards and that kind of thing, bigger properties. So we do it for beauty, but we also do it for future resale and things like that. Whereas Japanese culture is not so intent on, they have smaller houses, smaller gardens, so that's why they like the Japanese maple so much. It's just it fits in their garden scheme, and so they have spent a lot of time and a lot of years, like over 300 years, different pollinization methods and interbreeding and that kind of thing, and seeing what they could create, and they've created some really, really great trees. Now they range, of course, like I said, in size from very miniature to full-size trees, and they make great bonsai. And I've got some really neat little bonsai at home, my private collection, they're probably, some of them are 10, 15 years old, and they're still, I got them about 18 inches tall. And I don't let them get any taller, but they spread, and then the trunk gets gnarly and thick and looks good. And it looks like, if you look at it from a little bit of a distance and kind of imagine, it looks like a full-grown tree, but they're only, 18 inches tall or 12 inches tall. And it's a real simple thing to do that, but a lot of people either are afraid to do it or they don't know how to do it to make that kind of growth appear. So just think about this when you're pruning. When you cut one branch, the growth, all of a sudden the root system that used to push the growth and the energy to that branch no longer pushes it to that branch. It pushes it to the main stem or some of the other main branches and makes them larger, thicker, and more gnarly, if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's if they cut a limb, hey, it's good.
It's got to go somewhere.
It's got to go somewhere because you haven't messed with the root system. But they make a great deck tree or a patio tree in a pot, like I say, and they can frame put a good look on your patio or your deck. I've got several that are in that way around my deck and right off the deck. And like I said earlier, they look like a fragile tree, but the opposite is actually true. They're tough. They survive neglect rather than pampering. And over the years, I have seen the majority of Japanese maples die from overwatering and over-fertilizing because you know, it's people think, well, it needs some water, needs some more water, because the petunias need water, and that you got planted next to the Japanese maple. The Japanese maple doesn't want it, man.
That's not the
so
thing.
Don't put your petunias and your geraniums next to your Japanese maples, for crying out loud. But some folks like them in their lawns and things like that, which is okay. But I always suggest that if you're going to do that, make sure you plant them in a berm. Create a berm that's, say, 2 feet tall or maybe 3 feet tall in the center where you want the tree, and then let it feather out into the lawn. And you might have a berm that's, say, 10 feet around, and then you can have a nice Japanese maple in the top, and there's lawn all around, and so you're watering the lawn, but the Japanese maple is raised, so it's not sitting in water and is draining through the into the surrounding ground, and it's not just sitting around
sitting
the
in there. Yeah, like in a pool.
Yeah, in a pool, exactly. And if people catch on to that, and they're good to go. And it gives you a little bit more of an artistic look. You know, you got here, say, your front yard, backyard, doesn't matter, but it's all green. And you say, well, why don't we plant a tree, or why don't we do this? Well, make sure you mound it up. Make sure you give it adequate drainage. Make sure when you dig the hole that you put good draining soil in there. Get rid of the clay that's, you know, basically Douglas County is clay, unless you live along one of the rivers where it's a little bit sandier. But, you know, make sure that you give it the capacity to be able to drain well and develop that root system. That's the important part. And and the first sign, how do you tell if a tree is overwatered? And I've said this 100 times. The first sign is that the leaf tips, the tips of the leaves, end, they start to turn brown, and then they begin to curl up.
That's not good.
And if you see that, and that's not just on Japanese maples, but that's just about on any plant, the leaf tip, because that's where the most growth is happening. So if the root system is suffering, then the tip, the growing tip, begins to suffer first. And if you see that on a Japanese maple or a rhododendron or an azalea, whatever.
Easter lily.
Easter lily, yeah. Go ahead and overwater it. But you know, and feel the soil. Dig down about 6 inches and feel it. And if it feels wet, hey, quit it. Quit watering that puppy. It's okay. But that's your first clue. It's browning up and the leaves are kind of curling. Mm-hmm. And it'll be not all over the tree, but it'll be in different spots of the tree, and that's the classic sign of overwater.
Okay.
On any shrub, but especially Japanese maples, okay? That's because I'm talking about them. But you stop the watering, and the tree will recover. Just cut off the little brown leaves and things like that, and that's okay. And and any shrub or other tree that's showing those signs, just cut those ends off, and it'll survive. In the meantime, you're not watering anymore. And like I said earlier, Japanese maples, they respond well to pruning and shaping. You can shape them in any way you want. Light pruning can be done at any time of the year. You don't have to wait till the leaves fall off. But if you're going to take major branches out, you wait till it goes dormant, you know, December, January, February in there. It's dormant, so you can do major cutting if you have to. That tree I was talking about earlier on my hillside, that's kind of, I was going to prune it last winter, and for some reason I never got around to it. I you know, when it kind of, when the leaves fall off, you kind of, and it's up the hill a little bit, and if it's pouring down rain,
yeah,
I'm not walking.
You don't
want
to do that.
Yeah, but I missed another pruning opportunity, because this limb is probably 4 inches, maybe 5 inches in diameter, and I want to cut it off at the base of the main stem. And if you do it now, it's going to cause some damage. But if I do it in December, January, the damage is going to be minimal.
Okay.
And the cut will heal. So that's.
Whereas it won't heal as well.
No, it'll leak. The sap from the nutrition that goes up the tree, it'll leak out that new cut.
Oh.
And by leaking out, it robs the rest of the tree of nutrition.
Oh, because it's trying to heal.
Exactly. You got it. You're okay. You must have been listening.
Always.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, feel free to prune them. Feel free to shape them. Buy them. plant them, they'll do well for you, and you'll not regret it because they're a beautiful tree. We got a break?
We do. Phone number once again.
673-4464.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, believe it or not, we still have time for a phone call or two.
And that would be 673-4464 if you have a question.
That it would be. You betcha.
So I've been talking about Japanese maples in your yard, et cetera. But like I said earlier, too, I do them as bonsai. And bonsai is like keeping the tree small, like maybe 1 or 2 feet in a very shallow, small pot. The purpose is to prune on a regular basis and any top growth, which increases. And when you prune it, the trunk diameter gets larger and causes the tree to look old and mature while it's in a pot. I mean, this thing goes back thousands of years in China and Japan. And this requires a bit of constant care because the root systems cannot expand. They're in a smaller pot, and usually they're pretty shallow at the same time. So in the summer, we water ours about every other day because they're sitting out in a fairly sunny location. And then I fertilize with a liquid fertilizer about three times during the growing season, say first shot might be in April, and then again in June, and then maybe a shot in August or September. And a light liquid fertilizer that you actually mix with water, and that's good enough. I don't want them to grow a lot. I just want them to be healthy. I want them to be able to survive and look good. But there's a balance you have to strike there. And When you do the pruning and et cetera, you know, like I said earlier, the it increases the trunk diameter and causes the tree to look old and mature while it's in a pot. And it's only 2 feet tall or 3 feet tall, maybe. And this requires constant care because, like I say, the root system can't expand. So you got to keep, there's a balance you have to keep. And if you try bonsai and you've never done it before and you try it and you're not succeeding, you're doing, several things wrong, like underwater, overwater, over fertilizer, whatever. But it's a good thing to try. But if you try it, don't try it your first time out of the box with a Japanese maple. Use a juniper. Junipers, you can't kill a juniper. I mean, you can plant it in the pavement and it'll grow.
Oh, they're almost like blackberries.
Yeah, they're worse than blackberries. Maybe not. Blackberries, I hate them. Oh. They taste good, but that's all.
That's it.
Yeah. So, it's the liquid fertilizer does a good thing, and it's not too hot, and you can control the mixture, et cetera. You go light, and you see what the results are, and then you might go stronger the next time around, see what the results are. The tree looks good. It's vigorous. It looks healthy. You got to find that happy medium in there. And it just so happens that the new owner of Wintergreen Nursery has asked me to do several bonsai classes in July.
Nice.
So if you want to know about bonsai, keep posted. She's going to run some ads, and you can call the nursery and talk to Jennifer about that. And the date hasn't been set yet, but I think she said the second week in July. But it'll be advertised, like I say, in a few weeks. So if you want to learn how to do bonsai, this will be a class for you. And at home, I have my own collection, which includes the Japanese maples and dwarf Yugo pine and juniper and other trees that I've been working on, like I say, for 30 years. I'll bring some of those in so you can see what finished products look like and what your end result should look like in, X amount of years. And some of my favorites that I've collected are from high elevation. either firs, pines, mountain hemlock, that kind of stuff. But I get a permit at the Forest Service. I don't go up there, you know, without a permit. I don't want to go crosswise of the United States Forest Service. Mm-hmm.
You renegade.
I am a renegade, but I do get a permit. It costs like 10 bucks or something like that. And I go up into the North Umpqua area, and I find the ugliest, most deformed, twisted mountain hemlock I can find at the 5,000-foot level, and that's the kind I take. When they're twisted and contorted and they're one-sided and they look like they're 100 years old and they're almost 40 years old and they're only a foot high, you know, because they can't grow. I mean,
they've had a rough life.
Yes, the growing season is limited because of the snow.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's still snow up there, for crying out loud. Yeah.
Wow.
And we're, you know, at 5,000-6,000 feet, because I go up around the backside of Mount Thielson up in that country and walk up these slopes and stuff, and there's just thousands and thousands of mountain hemlock, and that's the predominant species growing there, and I like them because they're just unique. They look good. They look old. When you dig them out of the ground, they look like they're 100 years old. Then you get them and prune them up a little bit and thin them out a little bit and put them in a nice pot, and you go, and people go, oh, look at the bonsai. Oh, you know, those are nice. How old is that? And I said, 2,000 years old. No, I don't say that.
With a $2,100 price tag.
Yeah. No. Yeah, a dollar a year. But up at that elevation, they grow very slowly, and they make perfect bonsai. But there are other things. There are pines that grow up there. Very few fir, but there are some. And like I say, I always get the ones that have been squashed by another tree branch falling on them. And, you know, so they continue to grow, but they grow sideways for a while, and then they turn up. So you got a natural curve in the tree, and it looks really, really old. And it is, but I have one that's about 100 years old.
Wow.
And it has multiple twisted trunks. But I put it in, I don't have a pot big enough, but so I put it in a redwood box because of its size. But, and it's only about 3 feet tall, but it has three trunks, and each trunk is about, 2.5 to 3.5 inches in diameter.
Jeez.
And they kind of go one way and then curve another way, and there's three of them coming out of the same root system. And yeah, it's beautiful. And from leaf tip, or from the tips of the needles on one side to the tips of the needles on the other side, they're anywhere from 3 to 5 feet wide.
Mm.
And during the classes that I'll teach, I hope to have it on display, but it takes two people to lift it. I got it in a big box.
And when are the classes coming up?
Sometime middle of July, about the second week in July, somewhere in there. But I'll have more information next week.
So they say, stay tuned.
Yes, stay tuned. And thanks for listening. I hope you learned something. I do every day I'm going to do this show.
All right. See you next week, Mike.
Okay, thank you.
The Afternoon Report is next on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.